I just thought of how, but it was quite, it will be quite heartbreaking for the loved ones, but I'm still thinking about this because I wanted to like do like, say, you know, a recording while I'm in a box being cremated, right? Then they'll play the sound over there like, hey, let me out, hey, I'm still inside here, that kind of shit, right? And yeah, la, so I was thinking of that, like, along those lines, make it a party, make it a big one.
And serve your beer.
Yeah, serve the beers, drink the beers, you're not drunk, you cannot leave the crematorium or something.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali.
It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.
And welcome to another episode of Dying to Meet You. And today we have a very, very special guest where we are sitting right here. This was the first time I was here. I remember I was sitting on this table too. And we have with us Chef Ivan from Blue Smoke.
Thank you for
being
here.
Yes. We started very early, so it's not your typical, you know, drinks that I usually will have at your restaurant. So tell us a little bit more about you. I know you're very, very famous and popular, you know. give us a little bit of background.
So we started 1925, brewing company, about 8-9 years ago, right? And this was kind of like a get out from what I've usually been doing for the past, 16 years, 18 years of my life. So previously I was a graphics designer, or more into the advertising realm. So I was in a couple of agencies and all that stuff, and I kind of, it's one of my passions that I always enjoyed, right? So, three big passions in my life, right? And I really need to do all those things to feel fulfilled. So one is art, of course, and the other one is food, and the last one is music, right? So not in any particular order. I've spent quite a number of years in this art realm, being very confused, because there's a very vast difference between being an artist and a mercenary for the arts, so, which is in the design world, right? So you're fulfilling all the stuff that your client wants and everything else. So I got a little bit jaded after a while because I couldn't get to the point where I could fully express what I wanted to do for my clients, right? So I found that very tiring, and I left the business, and I spent a little bit of time in music as well. That's how I met my wife.
Oh, you're a singer? She's a singer.
So not exactly how I met my wife, but that was really more of like the pat-tor times, you know, where I would be playing the band. And after we got married, I spent about another 3-4 years in the band playing.
What instrument did you play?
So I played the percussion. I played the drums, nice. I played percussion and everything else. Oh. And so I just followed her, just trying to understand the music scene. And I realized it was very similar to what I was facing in the arts realm. Mm. So I got very, very tired really quickly, right? And so fortunately, one of the perks of being in a band is that you always be playing live sets at restaurants and everything else. Mm. So I got to, you know, as a staff member, you get to go to the back kitchens, you get to see what's happening and everything else. And it kind of rekindled everything I really enjoy about cooking. But then there was also another vast difference, because cooking for people that you love and cooking for friends and hosting and all that stuff is very different from running the business, but nobody told me then. So I got down with my brother, and who is also a an avid supporter of the cocktail scene, right? So he was a senior auditor, right, at KPMG. So same thing, a little bit tired because that was his first and only job.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so during his, one of the perks of his job is that he was always have to hang out at bars because he would talk to clients and all the entertainment stuff, right? So we would always sit at the bar because that was the best place to get free stuff, and that's why I got you guys sitting at the bar, right? Free
stuff. And got to know all the stories.
Exactly, and you see the things that are happening right
the
there.
Actions.
And you get a lot of free drinks, and you get to see how they do it, right? So these are tricks of the trade that you don't really learn from books or from school or whatsoever. So when I decided to go and I sit down with my brother and say, hey, how about let's do this, right? And we original idea was that we just wanted to set up a hole in the wall kind of thing, because we realized that throughout all our gatherings with the family, because my family is quite large, we have 40 plus people, so each one of them have their own cooking talents as well. So everybody will do their potluck thing, right? And there is this particular uncle who always bring beers, all right? As much as a very avid drinker myself, I never knew what craft beers were. Because your imagination would only be you know, be limited to what you're exposed to. So okay. Tiger beers, yes. Heinekens and all that stuff, right? So you never understood that there were actually beers of different flavors and different types. And even if somebody would pass it to you, because you don't know it, right? So you won't appreciate it. Mm. So you just chug it. Oh, nice. I like it. I don't like it. Whatever. You never knew what it could do for you. So when we started having this conversation, my uncle also, you know, he was already in his 50s. So he was also, you know, what you call the backside itchy, you know, looking for the midlife crisis thing, yes. Right? He says, yeah, I want to do this as well. So we came in and he said, okay, let's do a hole in the wall kind of thing. And we just serve beers and we do fried foods, like every other bar, bars, right? Uh-huh. And that's when we started doing the testings and we realized this is not going to work because we are not going to enjoy the foods. Mm. Because food and beers, they work very, very close together. Mm. Just like how wines and foods are compared. So of course the discussion got on and it got out of control and got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we started the first, our 1925 microbrewery and restaurant back then in Jalan Besar. Mm. So it was a two-storied thing and there was the tanks right behind the bar. People could see how things are being brewed and everything else. And we were serving, you know, Asian fusion stuff, you know, Italian, Western, very bastardized, yes. Italian foods. Very, very embarrassing to say it. Right now, look, hindsight, yeah, total okay. Hindsight, right? So, but that was, out of the lack of confidence in the industry. So when we started doing this, we had a lot of flack. We faced a lot of flack from the industry. Because number one, we believed that craft beers shouldn't be placed on a pedestal. So back then, 8 years ago, craft beers were like $20, $30 just for a pint. It doesn't make sense to me. And I thought, no matter what kind of beers, you should be looking at a slightly cheaper end where, you know, you can access to the masses, where the masses can access to it. And then from there, you build up the base and you slowly bring up the prices, right? And all that stuff. So we started doing a lot of very controversial stuff in the market because we were not from the market, right? We didn't know the rules. We didn't know the regulations. So we just did it. Like, we just felt that it was, we felt it was natural. It was the right thing to do. And all the things that we were trying to juggle for the last, early 4 years of our business was really to, kind of struggle within the balancing act of satisfying the industry and also the customers, right? But fortunately, we took the right path, I guess, and here we are today at Joo Chiat, where we now have a separate entity for the restaurant and also a larger factory for the brewery. Yeah. Okay, so I got two kids, right? Yes. So my eldest, I don't care where. So my treatment to him was like. It's like, I don't care whether you understand me or not, but I want to let you know that there is a reason behind certain things that we do. And sometimes when you're saying the reasons, you find, hey, these reasons are so stupid. Why should we even do that? Exactly. And then you readjust, right? Reassess, right? What's wrong with my life? There's something wrong with how I was brought up. So I think it helps. It helps, right? So famous dishes, I think before we kind of moved on to Blue Smoke, we were well known for the fish porridge. We were well for our expensive fish porridge was like $16 for a big bowl of fish porridge. That was how I was fed in my family, right? If the bowl cannot fit your face, right, is the wrong bowl, that kind of thing, right? And then we have the braised duck. So yes. My maternal side, my grandmother, they actually ran a very authentic. They used to run a very authentic kuay chap stall with a braised duck and all the pig entrails and all the stuff, right? So again, that was another half of the Teochew training, cooking training that I had from another perspective. So okay. One was the food supply, yes. And the other one was retail, right? So that was kind of a wholesome F&B training, yeah. I would say.
It's sort of preparing you for this day, no?
I don't know, man.
For some divine, you know, intervention. But so I remember the braised duck, and you had something that was like a smoke. Is it the ribs?
Yes, smoked ribs.
Oh my
smoked meats right now. Interestingly, was that a lot of people don't know, but I actually hated smoked meats. As in the American smoked meats, because I don't know if a lot of people will kill me for watching this, but I've tasted quite a number of this American smoked meats, and I never understood what the big deal was.
Okay.
Right. It didn't hit the right spots. I was eating something, and I don't know what I was eating, and it was just salty on salty and everything, and it was very single dimensional. So I kind of avoided that part of that cooking process or cooking technique for a long time because I just really felt. Not a big deal because and the funny thing was I put myself through this not deliberately, but it was just by chance that I just enjoy playing with fire, and the irony is that my father had to be a fireman, right? So, yeah. So he always tell me, no, thank God you are now a chef, no, or else you'll be a most famous arsonist. Right? I said, yeah. Happened a few times. He caught us a few times.
You and your brother.
Yeah, wow. Me and my brother, right? So anyway, so it's always been cooking with charcoal fire, barbecues and everything else. And our barbecues are not like sausages on sticks and you know, or stuff that you buy ready-made. So we were talking about steaks, we were talking about fish, seafood, and we were prepared from scratch. And that was the way I hosted my design team back then.
Mm.
Right. So when I was running a team, I was like, let's go to this place and eat. I was like, why bother? Let's chill at my dad's place, and we had a nice patio, and we would just get drinks, and nobody's gonna stop us, right? I'm just gonna cook for you guys. And I enjoyed that.
Mm.
And the funny thing about me is that I'm always very ambitious. So if today I can host 10, that means I can host 20. I can host 35. And it just went on, like, you know, the challenge just went on when I'm free. So then until you hit the point and say, okay, this is suicidal, okay, it's stupid, let's stop. And that was prior to the formation of the company. So that was some of the things that I think were the critical building blocks to what enabled us to do all those things, right?
Mm.
Yeah, so smoking meats and everything else. So one of the distinct difference is that we actually smoke with Asian herbs, right, or Asian spices. So our smoked meats are the beef brisket or the ribs. It's actually kind of like marinated with the garam masala. Some kind of garam masala mix that we formulated here. And now it's being passed on to Jaya, one of the spice, I think fourth generation or third generation spice man, our age one, you know, who took over the father's business and now trying to breathe new life into the whole traditional business, you know. And he's helping us to formulate this garam masala with new flavors, new AG flavors, you know, and other rempas as well that we use in our curries and everything else. So I felt that the smoking technique, right, was the extension of what we Asian pit masters would use, or rather, we Asian pit masters lack. Because Asian barbecues are really aggressive fires, you know, so you get the chow ta, yes. You know, the crackling and all the carcinogens that you need, right? Yeah, so it's a lot of that. But American smoking techniques are slow, the colder side of the smoke. So you're looking at almost like braising the meat over long, long hours, 19 hours or so, just to get the textures you want, right? And I actually don't know why they do that. I think other than the fact that they had a lot of time on their hands, because they have to choose the worst part of the worst cut of the cow, to put themselves through the arduous process of having to smoke the meats. But I think the process was what was enjoyable, because you're 19 hours. It means that you're 19 hours. You just have to focus on two things. One, keeping yourself hydrated, if you know what I mean, with the beers and everything else, and you're just looking at the fire.
Yes.
And so it's a very hypnotic process. I think it's a very nice therapy session, you know, with yourself.
Yeah.
Right, and I enjoyed that process quite a fair bit. So during the COVID, we had a chance to do a pop-up, kind of a collab with one of these farms in Choa Chu Kang.
Mm.
So it's a full-on farm. So, you know, I'll be there like 2 a.m. in the morning, and it's quiet. Wow. You can hear dogs barking and whatever, and crickets. And it's just quiet, nice breeze. So, and it's open space. So you feel, it's a very nice feeling where you feel minute.
Mm.
You know, very small, and yet this little fire you're starting here can be seen like a thousand miles away. You know, I don't know, it's a very romantic feeling. And you're just chugging beers, it makes the feeling more romantic also.
You put on some candles.
No candles. We have a total fire going on, and we don't need candles. Right. And it's nice, you know. So after that, we will serve out dinner probably at 6 p.m.
Oh.
Right. With a good set of number of people. And it's, you see that look on your face, that the look of satisfaction. I think that's better than the paycheck. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah.
Satisfaction. So what was your, because you've been through, like, you know, in the art world, the design, then to F&B.
Right.
Have you ever had, like, what would you define as a lowest point of your life?
Actually, the lowest point of my life is probably also the same, the highest point of my life. It's, so I think one of the key events that happened when I was about 21, 22 was during Chinese New Year, I suddenly developed, my body decided to have an allergy, a severe allergy reaction towards scallops and abalone.
Oh gosh.
So it's during Chinese New Year, and being Chinese, you must have abalone,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
So it was funny because all this while I've been eating all the stuff, so this fine day, we went to my mom's friend's house, if I remember correctly, and it just happened that on that day itself, there was just one last piece. So we were eating a steamboat thing. I said, okay, just take and eat. And thank God it was just one last piece. Because if I eaten more, I probably have gone. Right. And so I developed the allergy pretty quickly. I swelled massively. I swelled and I started to develop anaphylactic shock. And my father being the emergency services guy, right, I was like, chill, small reaction only. I was like, voila, I cannot breathe anymore. So then we made the trip to my grandma's house, well, the kuay chap grandma, right, preparing to have dinner. So I was so bogged down already. I was like, okay, I disaligned a bit, and I was, again, my vitals were dropping and everything, but I just felt, how to say, there was this, what we call the impending sense of doom. Very, very strong. So I was telling my dad, I said, no, we better go see the doctor. I don't feel really good at all. So, begrudgingly, he brought me down to some nearby GP.
And the GP, Chinese New Year.
Yeah, exactly, right? And the GP, wow, he also said, you know, yeah, it's probably a small reaction to something you ate. And I was already swollen, like my meat was dripping off because it was so clogged up with water.
Oh, you know,
and I was choking, my eyes were puffy and everything else, and my face was swollen. I couldn't breathe, I couldn't talk. So he was, okay, I'll give you a jab, and that was it, and go back and rest. So I went back and rest, and I said, okay, I felt that, okay, maybe I should do something about it, right? So I decided to go to the toilet, try to purge, you know, vomit or try to pass it out. So I was in the hospital. I remember the doctor giving me 3 separate jabs of adrenaline to my chest, to the heart, right? I remember waking up for a brief moment, saying, you jab me one more time, my heart is going to explode. I cannot take it. And then they started checking, of course, it was, haywire, right, going a bit crazy. So they gave me another jab to slow it down. And then I was wheeled into ICU for about 3 days in coma, right? And so that was kind of a shocker because at the time, I was kind of like, 20, you're 21, you're just bumming around. You don't really know what you want to do. It was slightly different. I knew that I wanted to take a career in the arts, right? But I was very undecided. So the actions don't kind of fit the dream. Mm-hmm. So you were like half-hearted into the whole thing, you know, So it was quite a defining moment because at the point of time, when you know everything is going to go away, suddenly all the distractions start to move away. And you start to realize by regret that, okay, I've not done this, I've not done that. What do I really want is very, very clear. And I think that kind of that memory kind of got stuck in my head for the longest time even to today. So it's very clear that what I envision for myself, right, and the kind of goals that I hope to achieve, you know? So it's one of the lowest and highest points at the same time. So
when you say highest, because you then have clarity in what you want.
Yeah, very, very clear because I was told because. I am a very lazy person, contrary to a lot of people think about me because they see all the hours I put in and everything else. But lazy in a sense whereby if I don't see certain values or certain need for it, right, I won't bother to do it.
Mm.
If given to my devices, that's what I was saying, right, if let's say my grandfather really started in 1995, I would really be the bum on the beach. I'll just sit there, I'll just, okay, why bother? Why bother?
Yeah.
I would, yes. Right? So it has to, I must have the why. I must have the why answered, right? Then the how will come.
Oh my God, this is like my favorite phrase, because I always use this because I said, Jim Rohn once said, the bigger the why, the easier the how.
Oh yeah,
right? So, when you know why you're doing whatever you're doing, then, you know, it's easy for you to figure out how. So the last time I remember sitting here and we were talking about the Chinese translation. That was the best.
That was terrible.
And I think you corrected my pronunciation.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, what's the right pronunciation for your restaurant?
Okay. Context, okay.
Yes.
Okay, for literal translation, it's just Lan Yan.
Lan Yan.
Okay, yeah. Blue smoke, right? So I was doing some of this documentary filming with a media call a while ago.
Yeah.
So the director was asking me for a Chinese name for our restaurant, right? So I said, yeah, because we do, we smoke the foods, and then there's a bit of the Asian char and everything, right? So for char, right, it's jiao, which is char, right?
Chota
jiao, right? So it should be called Lan Jiao.
If you pronounce it correctly.
If you pronounce it correct. So if you don't pronounce it correct, you are not my audience.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
that's why
oopsie.
I was like, oh, have you been to Lanjiao? What about, like, you know, it was so interesting to hear what you said about almost like a near-death experience in a way. But has that also changed your perspective? Like, what if one day, you know, when you depart this world, how would your party or how would your farewell be like?
Actually, I did, because my last wishes are pretty much similar to my dad. Mm. So my dad, we are he is obviously like a free thinker. Mm. You know, to some extent maybe he thinks he's God. So I don't even know what the term is. Not an atheist or agnostic or something. Yeah. But back to seriousness. He mentioned a lot of times that way early. I mean, so he's now in his 60s, right? So he was always said in his 50s, right? He said, I don't mind dying tomorrow. I was like, why the hell you say things like that? You know, what the heck you're talking about? At the time, the grandchildren are out and I just got married. And why are you saying shit like that, right? Really? So he said, no, I've done everything already. Everything I wanted to achieve is all there. You guys are doing a great job. What for? So I kind of slowly understood what he's talking about right now. Right? I'm not saying that I've reached that stage, but I kind of understood a little bit of what he's talking about. Not that he wants to die, but he's okay with dying. Right, so I think it's the same idea as well. So his wish was to be cremated and scattered in the sea. Don't kind of bother me. That's my time out, man. Leave me alone. Right, don't need flowers. Don't need yearly paying of respects and everything. Just leave me alone. So I think I kind of like that as well. But it's not really my style. So if let's say given by choice, where I don't have a... So if I were to die, maybe say by accidental death, okay? Or maybe a heart attack or something, I just drop dead and die. Sure, that would be my preferred mode. But if I were to slowly waste away, like maybe I got a cancer or something, right? I think I would pull a prank.
You pull a prank?
I think it would be quite fun because I don't know, maybe like, I just thought of how, but that was quite, it would be quite heartbreaking for the loved ones, but I'm still thinking about this because I wanted to like do like, say, you know, a recording while I'm in a box being cremated, right? Then they'll play the sound over there like, hey, let me out! Hey, I'm still inside here! That kind of shit, right? And yeah, so I was thinking of that, like, along those lines, make it a party, make it a big one.
And serve your beer,
yeah, serve the beers, drink the beers, you're not drunk, you cannot leave the crematorium or something. Or you join me in a box or something.
I'm trying to in the box.
No point if you cannot drink, you know, what's the point of living? Yeah, things like that, you know, or do something along the lines of being smoked, you know, I don't know.
Well, you'll be in the smoke
I'll
anyway.
I'll be in the smoke anyway, right.
But, you know, it's very interesting because I did have a client who asked me if I could, what do you call that, the grower? The like beer?
Oh, a growler.
Growler, yeah. Yes. So she asked me if I could get like a growler for her husband who loved beer.
Right.
And I thought that was and she wanted to use it as an urn.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that could be a concept, you know, 1925, then you'll be there watching, supervising everybody, like, you're doing your job, you know, make sure you don't smoke and do it.
We want to mix it up. We have to label it correctly before we brew it into a beer.
Exactly.
Yeah, actually, that would be a good one, actually. Yeah, drink your loved ones, I don't know.
Yeah.
Now you have to wear the diamond thing, right?
The diamond. There's so many. I mean, like, nowadays, the way to commemorate a loved one is, you know, I always feel like the world is, you know, now that the world is flat, right? So there's a lot of concept that you can bring in overseas, like, you know, we brought in the plant, so you never know, like, hey, that plant is...
Yeah, I actually like the idea as well to be regrown into a tree or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's what... actually, you know, it was interesting about when you said about art, because I was thinking, what if we can live in the metaverse?
Oh, wow.
Right. I mean, like, imagine, like, oh, like your dad say, oh, don't worship me anymore, da-da, or, like, scatter me to sea.
Yeah.
But what if we want to have conversations, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I still miss my dad. Like, I want to have a conversation with him.
Sure.
I didn't get that chance because, you know, he passed away. But my dad and I don't know about you, maybe Teochew la. My dad and I, we don't have that. That kind of friendship. Like, my dad was very well respected at home. So I only got close to him when he was sick for the last 2 months, where I was his caregiver.
Right.
Then we started to strike a bit more conversation. Never really know what he does at work. Never.
Wow,
like, I didn't have that opportunity because Sabo Ma, I never worked in a funeral home. So, but I really hope that, and I remember the first year when I was in the funeral business, there were a lot of obstacles, right?
Of course.
And especially helping my mom was still grieving for my dad, and every day I see her cry, but yet at the same time then as a daughter, you need to be stronger. Then suddenly your role changed, yes, right, the dynamics. So I remember telling myself, like, oh, how I wish my dad was here to give me advice, right, you know? So I think it's the same that I always fantasize of how afterlife would be,
sure,
right? And whether, I mean, he does come to my dream, but is to tell me, now it's Qing Ming Jie, right?
Yes, that's right.
So the dream I had was when, so my dad and I, we never worked together.
Okay.
Never. So in my dream, we were working together, and I was helping him at a funeral, and then he calls me by my nickname, Xiao Mei, Chikana Huan Yi, like, he passed me a set of clothing and said, go and help. And hey, he pointed at the casket, like, go and help him to change.
Right.
I was like, oh, okay. So I took the clothing, I went over, and I looked down, it's my dad.
And then, wow. And then that's freaky,
yeah,
okay.
So I woke up, you know, I was like, what is this message that he wanted to give to me? And at a point in time, I was with my grandma, I stayed with my grandma. So next morning, I said, hey, oh, bang yo, a kong, you know. Then, then I was like, hey, so I was asking my grandma, like, what do you think he's trying to tell us? Then my grandma and I, we both decided, I think your dad needs new clothing. So then we're like, okay. So we went the next day. I literally got my uncle with me, the youngest brother. I said, hey, my dad, you know, your brother gave me this dream.
Right.
Let's go and buy clothes for him. So he went to choose all the clothes with me. Like, oh, I think your dad will like this and all that. So it's, you know, afterlife is always a very fascinating thing for me. But you know what? You know, I really think that we have tons of beer drinkers in Singapore.
Right.
And I have not once, but quite a number of times where they ask, you know, do you have a place where we can have a memorial service?
Sure.
And you know, how can we celebrate, right? Because I think nowadays people want to celebrate.
Yeah, we have a variety of people that comes in, like, you know, and it's interesting because of where we are situated in Joo-Chiat, right? There's a lot of these expats that are around the area who are pit masters or smokers themselves back in their home. Right, so I've met, when we first started about 2 weeks into this blue smoke thing, and I've met quite a number of American barbecue people and all the smokers and everything else. They come by and just want to check you out, you know? Mm. And it's quite interesting because one of them told me is that, yes, this smoking of meat is not going to be, what you're striving for is consistency, and then of course being better at it while getting consistent, right? There'll be bad days. Deal with it, there'll be bad days.
Mm.
Right, and sometimes the meat could be delivered to your door with the best cut, and you just do it terribly because you are just off that day, you know, and it happens. So it felt much better because the approach was that this is a very forgiving, or it should have been a very forgiving kind of approach to doing things. But I also do understand that, you know, when you're serving things to customers, they are paying for it, right? So when we do certain things, when we're to the extreme, I'll just tell people, say, no, today's food is cannot good. I will not sell it to you. I don't care how much you like it. It's not going to go up.
Nice.
If you want, I can cut this piece for you, give you for free, and you tell me in exchange for money exactly what is wrong with it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we do this quite constantly with our beers, with everything else, and that's how we actually started learning so much, you know, about this smoking thing in a very short time, and even with the beer brewing process, we learned so much with all these people, and. With the beer brewing process, it was worse because we have also people coming in. And these are long processes, right? We're talking about 2 months, 1 month fermentation and writing and et cetera. So before you come up with the product. So a lot of things can happen within a time frame. Same thing with this 19 hours, a lot of rubbish can go down, right? To screw things up. So a lot of people don't understand that you cannot just go to a restaurant at a certain time and go there and decide, this is a lousy place, I'm never going to come again. Because F&B is a very fluid, dynamic, right? You have people who are changing constantly the jobs, right? The chefs, they move around, they learn new things, they get used to the ingredients, and things like that. So you get better over time. So what I usually do for myself, even where as a patron or a customer, I'll go to a new restaurant, I'll taste it, I understand. Okay, I understand what they're trying to achieve. Then I'll comment based on the context. If they ask me for it, lah. If they don't, I'll just keep my mouth shut. I'll stay away from the keyboard. I don't want to tell anybody, right? And then I'll visit them maybe 3 months later, 6 months later.
Check
and then,
in, right?
Yeah, I check in. And then decide for myself whether or not, okay, this restaurant is worth coming back it's worth my time to keep coming back. Because if they're constantly improving, that is a good sign. Right, so it shouldn't be that. And I think that is the approach to a lot of people with how people are in their lives, right? I remember I was told when I was going to, I decidedly to quit JC to go to the poly. I was told by people around me, my loved ones, You're a bloody waste of time. Yeah. Why do you give up this to go to a shitty hole like a poly? Why do you want to do this? Right. So I mean, sure, there are misconceptions, all the old traditional backward thinking. Sure, but it's just that slice. It's just a cross section of that point of time of the person's life. Why do you want to say things that might seal it forever? So a lot of people don't understand all these things, right? So we tend to be a little bit more forgiving when you're in a restaurant, in the kitchen. So unlike most of the Hell's Kitchen kind of thing you see, although I do believe those intentions are good, yeah. All right? But it's a little bit different here. So you screw up, I always tell my guys, yeah, so what, you screw up? It's done already. Mm. So now what's the next step?
Yep.
Right? That's how to prevent the screw up?
Mm.
Right? How to do this better? You break the glass, break already. I scold you also like that. The glass is still broken, right? You know what I mean?
True.
There's no point.
That, yeah.
But how do you want to handle this to make sure that you never ever break a glass ever again in your life?
Yeah.
Right? That's the whole point. So it's been this way that we've been working on with our team, with the people around us, and it's still a very trying process. It's very trying because it's against the programming that we are so used to. Right, so yeah.
Yeah, we are programmed with your grandfather running around.
Yeah, with the slipper, right? You know, slipper. Wow, with the slipper, then with the belt, then God knows with the broom and God knows what. And then it, hierarchy, you know, after my grandfather hit me, then my grandma would say, "Lema hai la, wow, ni chu su hen zhong la." Then I hit instead. Bah, after the whack already, then come back and tell my
father.
If my eldest auntie comes in first, right? She will complain to my eldest auntie, and she's a disciplined mistress, for God's sake.
Oh my God.
And she will say, huh? Me and my cousin, you both do naughty things. Bah, 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 bah. Wait. That's not finished already, right? My father will come back. How come you got cane marks? Who beat you?
Oh.
Were you naughty? Yes. Another one, and my mother will say, you beat very hard, I beat. Okay. Wow, one bloody thing, you can hit 5 times at least, you know. You know how terrible, but
it's,
I think
like
we, yeah, but we bloody deserve it, lah.
Yeah,
and we all turn out all right, so it's quite okay.
I always say, you know, like, spare the rod, spoil
the
kid,
child,
right? Yeah, just spoil the child. So I want to ask, like, what is your life motto? Because I think, you know, I've learned so much today about you, the perspective about your life, and how you decided to jump, like, from JC to poly. What has always been your life motto that drives you, or what are the messages, you know, you can share with the audience?
Actually, for me, it's one very simple thing. I really enjoy the journey. Of course, the destination and the how fast I want to reach my endpoint was never a concern. Mm. Right? Some people are impatient. Maybe I'm too patient. I don't know. You can call it determined, whatever you call it. But I think it's a lot of this self-prescribed perfectionist, right? Which is a bit, I would say it's not to the extent whereby like my idol, like Steve Jobs, the kind of perfectionist. It's just that I just want everything within my control. I want to know everything, very old school. I want to know everything before I can do something well. And if I want to do something, it better be done well, right? It better be done better than many of the other people I have learned from and whatsoever. So I think that kind of cost me as well, and that kind of also defines me a lot in what I do. So I can be, you can see me keep going at the same recipe for how many years, just slowly trying to perfect it, right? At least to my level of perfection. And the sad part is when I reach that perfection, right, it's like that only, chee. And that's the problem.
Next thing,
Yeah, and then the next thing, because and that's the worst part, because I've already exceeded that goal, you know what I mean? Your abilities have exceeded the goal. So I just have to move on, so it will become something else. So.
Yeah.
That's the part of me that's a little bit taxing on my body and in my mind. I think the next thing is that I wanted to experience a lot of things. I want to experience not just work or not just job, but relationships, friendships, situations. So there's sometimes I just wonder, how would it feel like to be in a car crash? You know, I don't deny, you know, you just want to feel it to understand what people are talking about or to this and that, you know, or how does it feel to say, in the lack of better example, how does it feel when you're taking drugs? Or such? So I do have those things that cross my mind. And of course, there's certain policing that goes in the head to stay out of all those things and all this stuff, but they do cross my mind, right? So I have this tendency to try to want to put myself in certain situations where it's normally not me, just to experience it for once.
Understand.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
So that's why I said it's great that I actually experienced the sense of impending doom or death pretty young. So I don't have to worry about revisiting it again, right? Yeah, so that's the part that was a little bit disturbing, because the funny thing was, despite me having said that, I actually did try to end it all twice, right? And the only thing that held back was the possibility of my the future family. And so at the time when I tried, I wasn't married, I wasn't anything. I was just very tired of life. I was just tired of the world, very tired. It's just so overwhelming, right? So it became a point whereby I just wanted to end it all. Then thoughts of what if I was a very good father? What if I had, so I wanted to experience that, right? So it kind of overwhelmed the other choice. Yeah. And I said, okay, let's come back in. So that's all I've been doing. So people talk about trying to dominate the world, you know, I don't really care for it. Because who cares about the world? Yeah. I mean, seriously, I have enough problems to deal with, right? And that's basically it. Like, I just want to get the things that I'm given or I'm tasked to do to be done well, right? And to be done well enough that would live beyond me. So the only job that right now we are thinking of is try to, I always tell, summarize it to some of those media people, is that my job is to make sure that if my son decides to be homosexual gay ballet dancer, and he realizes that he's bad at it, he has a choice to turn back.
Yeah.
All right, not from homosexuality, but from being a belly dancer. Nothing wrong with whatever choice you want to make.
You empower them.
Yeah, to empower you to go and experience whatever you want. You want to be a construction worker, go for it. You want to be a doctor, go for it. Whatever, yes. But you feel like whatever you're doing, sure, there is a backup, right? For you to have enough resources to kind of turn back again and do whatever you want, just like what happened to me, right? So it's the same thing. So, and if let's say, along the stories of my family, right, because we do record stories, our family do stories all the way back to our
God knows what.
Yeah, the Jiahu, yes.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Right, so I want to be in there for the right things, you know, it's already in already, like it or not.
It's all in the family.
No, but they will never write it because they will never write all the scandals in the family. Nobody ever writes rubbish and scandals in the chest.
Yeah, laundry,
exactly.
Right?
So it will all be the good stuff, right? But how good is good, right? So it's like, you know, like maybe say Ivan and EK, my brother, and Uncle Joey is the one who turned this around for the family, so that now he can have, I don't know, now they can be the asshole lying on the beach with the Ferrari and the bottles of beers, or things like that, like, you know, or maybe we've contributed to, because we have a lab and all that, doing some science work, right, or how we contributed to the food production in the world because of global warming. So these are things that I think, these are ambitions and dreams, I would say.
So tell me about how would people remember you? How would you like to be remembered?
That's the funniest thing, you see. Just 2 days ago, was it 2 days ago? Yeah, 2 days ago, my poly mates, I've not seen them for like God knows how long, since I graduated, I think. So I was never very close to them. At least that's what I thought. To be honest, their names never crossed my mind ever. After we graduated, never. Right? And they came. They came and visit, you know, they said, oh, I brought some friends. So it was like an inaugural gathering of some sort. I was cooking and serving them. So it came to a point whereby, I don't know how, it came to a point of discussing what I was like.
Okay.
So I asked them very point blank, so was I that asshole in school?
In school.
Right, because I was a high flyer. I worked my ass off, right, because from JC, again, I gave up that throne to go to somewhere bad, right, according to my family. So I better make it work, right? So I was really very obsessed about trying to make it work well and be the top student, whatever KPIs there were. So in my head, I was just, I'm not here to make friends. All right, I'm here to make a mark. Right, that's all I was interested in.
Laser right? focus.
Yeah, laser focus. Who, pretty, what, ugly, I don't care. What you got, what scandal, I don't know. That's not your problem, not mine, you know? But then they said, one thing was quite interesting was that, you actually spent very, I said, I don't have cliques, right? I'm obviously that anti-social, low ranger. But they said something very interesting. They said, no, you actually spend equal time with everybody, as far as they're concerned. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, do you remember you were close with this group of people, this group of people? I said, oh yeah, you're right. I was hanging out with them. But why, I don't know, but I was just trying to talk to them, I understand them. And when the time's up, I just move on, you know. I didn't help any baggage in terms of I need this from you or whatever. It's just done, you know, move on. And the other friend said, you spend a lot of time with the people who are outcasts, the people who don't want to be associated with anybody. And he asked me why. I said, huh, I did. I said, I didn't know. I just found them interesting. I don't understand why they are like that. So I just went to say hi and be friends, and I just hung out with them, and they turned out okay to me.
Wow.
So I didn't realize these things. Because as far as I'm concerned, I also see myself in a way whereby I'm a little bit of social arrogance, you know, where you want to be friend-friend-law, you don't want to be friends also like that. I don't have any much time with people anyway, right? My time is just there, right? So it's quite weird. So it was quite weird that I was told that I was like that.
You know the message that you said when you shared this, that I think you're just being human. You're just being who you are.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times people don't socialize with certain people. It's preconceived mindset, like, oh, I don't want to be with this person,
right,
and all that. But I don't... So, like, someone said something to me as well. Like, oh, you seem to be able to talk to anyone. And I remember the first message...
Yeah, even the did.
Well, they don't talk back to me.
You don't want to get chicken shit. Yeah, you better not.
That's true. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, but, you know, and I realized that when the guy said this to me, the first thought I said to him was, because I only see souls. I only see your soul and my soul, we are connecting.
That's interesting, yeah.
I don't see, okay, what car you drive, what you wear. So I feel like you were the same, like, you only see souls, like, not the ghostly souls, but, you know, we connect on that level that, oh, I want to get to know you, what your soul and my soul, how we connect. And I see that about you.
I'm very interested in how... People's lives cross. You know that point of crossing the intersection, and how it would go from there. So it's pretty much like the Marvel thing, right? How it intersects and everything. So I always feel that every time there is a point of intersection, you take something away and you give something as well, right? So it's that exchange that makes you that gives you the many paths of alternate realities that you could have been, right?
Mm.
So that's something I was very obsessed with for a very long time. And until today, same thing. So you have exchanges with people, even if it's the briefest of moments, right? There's this exchange, and that might pivot you to become something else.
Mm.
But then again, it's a mistake to think that because I want that something else, that's why I deliberately make the exchange. It's not. I really leave it to how, what you call fate or nature or whatever.
Or
if I bump into you, I bump into you, I meet you, sure. Right, and if it allows by, I don't know, by programming or whatever, we have this friendship or relationship going on, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah,
I really feel that's how life is. And I actually have a dying question to ask, since you are so interesting, dying question. So, what will be your last meal if you know tomorrow is going to be...
Wow, I know this.
You know this?
Yeah, beef noodles.
Your beef noodles? The one you cook yourself?
Yeah, or rather the one that my father cooks if he was still alive. If he will be still alive by that happens.
Oh,
it shouldn't happen, yeah. Yeah, so I think everything that started it all was beef noodles. So my dad cooks a very mean beef noodles, and I'm not talking about proper proper noodles, it's instant noodles, beef noodles.
Mm.
Right, so it's very jacked up, right? And everything else, you got all the perks and everything else. So, And that will be like the thing that I always look forward when he cooks. It's either the beef steak or the beef noodles, but his beef steak is now not so good.
Oops, Daddy, sorry.
He knows it.
He knows it.
Yeah, but his beef noodles are still kick-ass. The flavors are on point. Everything is just comfort food, you know?
Mm.
And that was the real one thing that I was, the thing that I really look forward to when I was come back from home from school, you know, when I was... No, there was nobody at home, so I was just have to go there and heat up the food and everything else, right? So that was the push factor, I think, that kind of propelled me to where I am today.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that goes into this beef noodles, because he refused to teach me how to do it.
He refused?
He refused. So he would tell me, like, figure it out. Well, the ingredients are there, figure it out. And he would challenge me. He would challenge me. He would say, yeah, you cook. If it's good, you're better than me, then great for you, good for you. Then you unraveled everything. Right?
Wow.
So it's...
Have you tried to master it?
Yeah, I've reached that point where it's definitely better, and he's given me the thumbs up approval already, right? But it's not... It doesn't have the flavors that he makes, right? So it's still different.
Yeah.
It's better, but it's different.
I understand. I mean, you mentioned it, right?
Yeah.
It's just how you prepare.
There's no way. So I don't know what he does. And the worst part is that he... he does it bloody differently every single time. Because he cannot remember his own recipe.
It's just like, okay.
Yeah, yeah, whatever, okay, okay. Then it comes out exactly the same. I was like, why? How does this happen? I never understood that.
It's true, it's true. Please do come by to Joo Chiat Road to Blue Smoke and follow Ivan on his Instagram, chef_IvanYeo.
Yeah. Just feel free to drop any messages or questions if you have, because I do answer them as well, but it may not be immediate, but I will
to get
try.
His attention, just give one star review. He will like, hello?
With constructive reviews, okay?
Yes, constructive,
okay? It's just, no make sense, I'll just ignore you and I'll blacklist you.
Exactly. I think, you know, the best is when you book a table at Blue Smoke, do sit at the bar. There's only like four, right?
Yeah.
Is it four?
So, okay, for three skinny people.
Skinny people, yes.
Three skinny people, four skinny people.
I remember the last time we had four, but we were like squeezing inching out to the side. Yeah.
So I had a couple of customers who were quite well endowed. Yeah, so two people only.
Yes. Yeah, but this is always the best because you get to see the chef prepare and you get to see Chef Ivan in action.
I'll explain to you all the things behind it as well.
Yes, and he's really on the move, like, you know, he's moving around all the time. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lovely session and I really get to learn a lot about your life motto. And I'll see you guys for the next Dying to Meet You episode. See ya!
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali.
It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Whatever you leave behind, that's the impact that you leave on it.